Welcome to Working Title Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Paul Kane. In this episode, I speak with my first biographer. Author Joy Harris has written about her remarkable grandmother in Singing Ain't Enough, the inspiring story of Maggie Ingram. We discuss researching biographical subjects, tips for approaching interviewees, and vetting testimonies. On the publishing side, she shares her thought process in choosing the indie route with Ingram Spark, plus putting the book together, marketing, and more. Enjoy! Well, welcome, Joy, to my Working Title Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited. Would you describe your book, Singing Ain't Enough?
So Singing Ain't Enough is the biography of my grandmother, Maggie Ingram, who was quite a remarkable woman. She ended up finding herself becoming a trailblazer in a male-dominated field while raising five children as a single mother.
And can you describe your grandmother and ways in which you might be like her?
Well, I do think my grandmother was quite remarkable. She was born in 1930, so African-American woman who was born to sharecroppers, so wasn't born in an affluent family, not from much education, and really looked at as like second-class citizens in her own country. And from that, she was just really ambitious and really determined to be more than what people expected or thought that she should be. And along her journey, fell in love and had children, and she and her husband got separated, and so found herself being responsible and the breadwinner of her family at a time when women, you know, were supposed to be at home, and so needing to work, and she had a knack or skill in being a singer, and so kind of unlike other people who were, you know, aspiring artists, she took to it more as a businesswoman and created a business out of it where she could feed her family and not only took the role of an artist, but also was manager and marketer and promoter and really broke down doors because at this time, gospel music was really a male-dominated field. There weren't many women, and if there were women, there were certainly not women leading male groups or leading their families in general. But she really found a way to kind of maneuver through that and go past barriers and obstacles that were really drawn in the sand for women like her and not just women of color, but women in general. And really broke open the barrier to allow women to be able to be leaders and be respected for being leaders. And so I think my similar characteristic to her is we're very tenacious. Like once we have our minds set on a particular direction, it's really hard to deter us from that direction. I think my husband would confirm that. So I'm grateful. And her work ethic, she really was one of those people where, you know, you got the job done first and your emotions came second. And so sometimes I think in her life that got in the way. But for the most part, I think it's a really wonderful lesson. And if there's something that you want, then you roll up your sleeves and you work for it and you stick with it and you become consistent so that you almost will yourself to be able to achieve that goal. So I think that's something that I inherited from her that I'm really grateful for.
Well, very admirable qualities for
sure. Thank you.
Are you musically inclined like your grandmother?
I am musically inclined. So fortunately, the group that she eventually started, so she went through leading a couple of male groups and then settled on forming her own group with her children. So one of those children being my mother. And so it's kind of like a rites of passage in our family. You must be able to do something musically. I think I took to it more of like a rebel. I think everybody did it. Everybody could sing and everybody had to participate one way or the other. So I tried to find a way to not do it. So mine was more by force necessary than by will.
Oh, I see. And do you sing or do you play an instrument?
I do sing, and my uncle, kind of in an accidental way, taught me how to play the drums. We were at a program, and my grandmother was the type that the whole family stuck together. So unlike other families where you hear where the lead singer would be on the road and the children would be left at home or they had nap, she took, we were like a herd. We all went. So it was my grandmother and her children's children. We all piled in the van or the plane or the bus or whatever it was every weekend and went to every show. And so I often was like the kid on the side of the stage, and I have a lot of male cousins who obviously didn't want to be bothered with a little girl straggling along and blowing the little cool that they were able to have. So I was often on the side of the stage while my grandmother and my mom and aunts and uncles were doing their set. And this one particular time, my uncle is playing the drums, and one of his cymbals goes flying off, so he motions for me to come over, and that was kind of like my crash course in drumming, and I loved it, so I kind of stuck with it after that.
Very nice. Do you have a set at home?
I don't have a set at home. I think, like again, I said, I think mine is by force, so I, somewhere in my mind, I thought, okay, if I keep all the musical instruments with me, I'll always be required to play, so I made sure there was some distance between, like, I can play, but I'm not equipped, so I can't exactly go on the road with you. At least that's what I told myself that would work.
Drums aren't very portable like maybe a guitar.
Not so much.
Not so much, okay. And how did you learn about this history of your grandmother? I mean, was this something you just knew your whole life, or is this something you discovered later, maybe in your teens or earlier adulthood?
In a way, because my family all travel together, I always heard bits and pieces of different stories, not the full spectrum of her story kind of all at one time. So I didn't know everything prior to writing the book. But the pieces I did know, such as train crashes and car crashes and airplane crashes, was kind of fascinating. And like, is this real or is this made up? Even the fact that her birthday literally is on the 4th of July, for a long time I thought it might have been a made up fact, because her life was always so grand. And so I just became curious. I'd say my late teens, I was just really curious and like, who are you? Like, it's some crazy stuff that I'm hearing about you. So it really was more of an investigation as how it started, to try to trace back like how she started and why and what it all was about and why is she now in this particular place. And once I started putting the pieces together, it just became more and more fascinating. And I knew if other people read it, they'd be inspired too, because her story is absolutely inspiring.
So is that how the book started? Was you just collected tidbits here and there?
Yeah.
Or did you always have it in mind, a book, or you just like to collect things and then later decided to make it?
I don't know if I initially thought it would be a book. I always thought that it might be a cool movie. Which actually I'm trying to work on now, but
I agree. Good luck to you.
Yeah. I thought just with the music element, and then that her life was about so much more than music, I just thought it would be cool for people to see it. I think her being an artist, I just thought it would be great visually. And I didn't at the time, being a teenager, really comprehend, okay, you do this and you make a movie. So I just started kind of writing it and putting it together like a story. And, you know, I put it down and pick it up and put it down and pick it up. And so finally I just said, okay, I'm going to make it a book first, and see if other people think that she's as cool as I think she is. And so that's kind of how my journey started, with actually making it a book.
And did you feel it should be you, or did you think maybe your cousins or aunts and uncles would be better for it, or you just always thought that you'd be the person to write it?
I thought that I'd be the person to write it. Again, I don't think I looked at it like documenting the history of my family, even though that's what it was. I really looked at it almost like an out-of-body experience, where it's this amazing woman that has achieved so much, and other people in general need to feel like they can do the same thing. And so I wanted it to be truthful. A lot of times in artistry, things get stretched and exaggerated just to make the artist better. And I knew, because it was something that was so ingrained in my family, I wanted to do it really as like authentic research, not just anecdotes from family members, but I really wanted to pull up traffic reports. I really wanted to talk to classmates that, you know, were in her elementary school, or middle school, or high school. So I really put forth a lot of effort in trying to make sure that everything that was in the book would be vetted by 2 to 3 sources, and that was kind of my goal, to stick to making it as truthful and honest as possible, and not spinning it one way or the other, just kind of let the facts tell the story.
Okay, very good. Did you have any qualms about writing about your family? Like, did they know from the beginning that you're going to write this book, or did you tell them later? Like, was there any apprehension? And not that there's anything in the book that I would think they'd have a problem with, but just some people are a little shy about that.
Right. I think starting out, only my grandmother knew that I was writing the book, because obviously I interviewed her. And I was like I said, a late teen and then early 20s. So I think at the time she thought, oh, this is so cute. You're trying to learn things about me. And my grandmother's personality, she has a very bold, very open and, you know, truthful and not much sugarcoating personality. So I felt pretty comfortable with, you know, if I only told the truth, then she would be proud of that. And so as I kind of went on the journey, I think rightfully so, because you are talking about family, and some people, like you said, are shy. There might have been some concerns, but I think when people got to the finished product, it's something that the family could be proud of, to say, you know, you actually figured out how to put a really wonderful legacy in something that could be passed down to fourth and fifth and sixth generation like, even my nieces and nephews, they know that, you know, their great-grandmother was important and she's popular, but they didn't really know the impact because they just weren't there to see it. Mm-hmm. And so now they have something in hand where they can really grasp, like, oh, she was actually really amazing, and you come from something that's really amazing.
Well, I think it's wonderful you did that. There are people in my family who do that as well. I'm kind of envious, because it's something I would like to do, but I feel very apprehensive about it. It seems like such a grand project, and even if everyone's on board with you, it just seems there's a lot to get right and a lot of research.
I think I was naive enough to not think about that until I was, you know, near the finish line. It was like, oh. But I think I just genuinely knew that she was, like, amazing. And I think the conversations that she had with me were more like almost mentor-mentee, kind of how it felt on this journey of, like, asking her questions and why she did certain things. So I felt very, I don't know, it felt very closed and purposeful. And so by the time I got to people's input, I think I was already out the gate so far that it didn't feel as overwhelming.
Okay. And how did writing the book affect you?
Well, I must say writers are probably one of the most amazing types of people. To sit in a room and pull something amazing out of just you and nothing else is, I've learned, is quite a feat. I think writing the book made me more appreciative of her life. It also gave me empathy for family and family members. I recognize, you know, sometimes you have history and things that happen in your family, and because you're younger and you come from a different generation, you don't know the backstory of why something is a certain way. So it was fun for me to say, oh, that's why this is happening over here, or that's why you two are the, you know, best friends, because of this thing that happened 10 years, you know, that I wouldn't have known about, my nieces don't know about, we just know that it exists, and it's a little bit confusing. So I really enjoyed seeing the patterns and the trends of my family, and seeing, you know, how far they've come from what they were. I really enjoyed the journey.
Well, wonderful. And as far as the research goes, what did you do? I mean, more specifically, like, what, for example, you were talking with your grandmother. Did you have a tape recorder with you? Was it a video thing, or you just took notes?
All of the above except video, because at the time when I started, video wasn't as popular. So most of the time I took notes, or I recorded it, or I looked up a lot of recordings when I was talking to her. And then other research came, really, you know, Google is now my best friend. So finding bits and pieces, not necessarily of her life, but I would learn, what school she went to, and then I would find the school in the superintendent's office, and then I would ask them for, you know, did they have any old yearbooks, and then tracking that down, and then going back to where she used to live and talking to people who still existed in the neighborhood, because you get that from a yearbook. So really it was just following breadcrumb after breadcrumb after breadcrumb to try to piece together what made sense. And my rule of thumb was, if I couldn't vet it with like more than at least two people, but oftentimes I wanted to be more than two people, then I wouldn't use it. And so that was kind of my compass to say, you know, I could find something that really is amazing, but if I couldn't vet it with two people, then I wouldn't use it. And so that steers you in a lot of different directions. And I tried to not have a preconceived notion about what I wanted the book to be or the theme, or I just did the research and I was like, well, where it takes me, it'll be a good place.
Okay. And how would you approach people who aren't your family members? Like, they're strangers. They might have known your grandmother, for example, but they don't know you, or you don't know them.
Right.
Is there a way you broke the ice with them and approached them? Did you have to travel to their house? Or was it via email, for example?
All of that. Sometimes it was email. I remember sometimes it was actually going to a particular radio station where she kind of became one of the first women to have her own show. And actually going to the station and walking through it with the then owner at the time and getting them to connect me with the owner who was there, you know, when my grandmother worked there. Sometimes it would be phone conversations, sometimes it was email. So whatever method the kind of the individual that I was interviewing felt comfortable with, then that's what I did. I tend to lean to the less time you can take out of people's day, you tend to get an interview. If it feels like, yeah, I just want to talk to you for a couple of hours, that really leads you up for a no. But what I have learned is it's really better to go in for, I just want to talk for 5-10 minutes, and then can I talk with you again later if I have any additional questions, and open the door more for a relationship to form where people feel comfortable than for them to think that they have like a big kind of arduous assignment by meeting with you.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, I mean, that sounds like a good idea. You know, make it a small bite for them.
Yeah.
And then, assuming it goes well, maybe ask for more later.
Right.
Okay, that's a good tip. Did these people share with you photographs or recordings, things like that, something tangible that you could use in your book?
Yeah, people are actually very helpful. I know kind of the climate we live in is like nobody likes anybody else, but people genuinely are really helpful. And so I had perfect strangers like mail me photos from their classrooms that they had for like 30 years and say that I could keep them, you know. So people really just were really helpful and went out of their way to try to give me correct information. I know I called, like, a tax assessor, I know, at least 15 times because I just was struggling to, like, read a map that he had. I mean, he really, like, walked me through and then found me the people who owned the land and then their children. And so I'm really grateful for those kind of secret angel strangers who just decided to even take my phone call.
Very nice. Now, when it came to actually publishing the book, can you take us through that? Did you go through a traditional route, which is finding an agent and a publisher, or did you do something hybrid, or is it self-published?
Yeah, it's self-published. I think I spent a lot of time, and I say a lot of time to me is a couple of days, so just with the type of person that I am. But I spent a lot of time thinking about that. I want to get an agent and shop it and pitch it and go through that whole process. And thanks for a nudge from my husband. Actually, he's just like, I can't even believe that you're thinking about, like, you're taking the time to think about that, and almost reminding me, like, you're writing the story about an entrepreneur who didn't wait for people to give her a pass to do something. And so I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'll just do it myself. And I think the way I looked at it was, how agents and publishing houses are now, they're looking for people that already have an established platform anyway. So if I was going to have to build a platform to convince somebody to take my project on, then I might as well build a platform to just sell my product directly to the people who I want to read it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I also think because in the back of my mind I still had, hey, I want to make this a movie, then this wasn't like my last shot at the rodeo, I guess. I knew that I could use this as a stepping stone for another place that I wanted to go. So self-publishing to me was kind of just giving myself my own green light, and, you know, going direct to consumer, which I think oftentimes is what you have to do anyway, even if you have a backing with you. You still have to figure out how to get your audience to pay attention.
Oh, yes. Yes. They don't, unless you're like a top level author, like big time, like J.K. Rowling, I guess.
Right. You
know, a lot of the work is still on the author to get the word. Yeah. Can you take me through actually, so what were your, you've decided to self-publish. Mm-hmm. How do you know how to proceed from there?
So there's actually a lot of information, just Google and YouTube, and you watch a couple of videos and you start to see what facts are overlapping and what facts are not. And then I have to give credit to a bookshopper called Judith Browse. She used to have these kind of Monday calls where you could call in and ask any question that you wanted to ask, and they'd be filled with maybe like 10 other writers and various stages of their writing journey. So I think that attending those was invaluable. I learned a lot of what not to do and what to do just by hearing other people ask questions, and her say, no, don't ever do that. And so I was like, okay, don't ever do that. But between that and Google and YouTube, I think those are my three avenues to finding information. You just can't be afraid to, you know, call customer service, like Ingram Spark, call customer service. And you might feel like, oh, my God, I'm probably asking the craziest question. But, if you know, ask the questions that you have so you can find out the correct information for yourself instead of not wanting to look a certain way. So I started with, all right, well, I'm going to self-publish, and how do I do that? And so those kind of three avenues of information is where my jumping off points.
Talk about a bit about Ingram Spark. Why did you choose them? They're the ones who are printing the book, correct?
Yes. Okay. So I thought about CreateSpace, and I knew I wanted to have a hardcover, which was different from most self-published books. But I knew that's what I wanted because I wanted the book to have an air of nostalgia, and that it was something that could sit on your coffee table, that it kind of had an old world feel to it. And so I wanted that to be carried over in the presentation of the book. And so CreateSpace only does paperback, so it took them off the table. And again, it's just asking the questions. Do you do paperback? Do you do hardcover? And find that information out, and it steered me in a particular direction. And so that was really my selling point on Ingram Spark. But I made sure that, you know, could I get on Amazon? Would it be a delay in saying, showing that my book wasn't available? I asked all of the questions because I knew where my audience got their books from. And so to me, that's, again, that's another rule of thumb. Find out who your audience is. Find out where they go to get their books. Go there. There could be a lot of avenues that are available and open and new and a lot of other people are using. But if your audience isn't there, then make that, you know, third or fourth on your list. Go where your audience is first.
Okay. Sounds good to me. I like to cover the cover and the interior. Let's start with the interior. How did that come about? Was that something you yourself designed, or did you hire somebody?
I hired all the designers for the cover and the interior. Okay. And I'm such a fan of social media because you can stalk people before you actually have to talk to them. And so I really just combed through. I used hashtags to kind of narrow down graphic designers that worked on books and Twitter. Twitter definitely was a great resource for me, where I could find people. And I looked for people who other people were commenting about if they did a great job on their books. So not just people who said, you know, I'm a graphic designer, I do book covers, but looking through their timelines and their feeds, and are other people that they work with saying, you know, they did such a great job and I'm so happy with the result, and, you know, all those types of comments. And that really narrowed down my field for who I wanted to work with. And then I just reached out to them and said, hey, I'm working on putting a book together, and can you send me a couple of samples of what you have? And I would say I've heard this didn't happen to, well, this did happen to me, but I've heard a lot of people, especially in terms of editors, like they would run across people who don't get samples or won't edit your first, you know, 500 words or something like that. And to me, if you're good at what you do, then you don't mind providing a sample on the work or samples that are comparable to the work that I'm giving you. So to me, that was a telltale sign of who I did and did not want to work with. Do they respond promptly? Because, you know, I like things done yesterday. So, you know, do they respond promptly? And so going through and using social media to source the people that I wanted to work with, and I ended up with some great people who were really willing to teach me a lot of what I didn't know, you know, writing it. But I always say editors really take your writing to the next level. So yes, people that were willing to not just mark up and critique, but also explain, you know, why you lean on a verb more instead of putting arrows there so that my future work would be better.
That sounds good. I thought this was a clever idea in your book. So each chapter at the top begins with a timeline.
Yes.
Graphic.
Yes.
Was that your idea?
It was my idea because it's not, even though it is linear, it's not a linear book. Sometimes things overlap in time period. Sometimes something is happening, you know, in the present and it goes to the past and it pops back into the future again and it goes to the past another place. And so I didn't want the reader to be confused about what I was talking about. I didn't want them to think, well, why is she talking like this? But over here, you know, she just had kids. And now why do the kids have grandkids in chapter two? So I wanted a really succinct way to express that. And to me, having that timeline did that in a very quick way. Again, because I like quick, fast things. I wanted people to be able to really read it in one setting because I wanted people to get through the whole story. And so I could have probably had a novel about her life because there was so much there, but I really wanted people to be able to sit down and, you know, a couple of hours later, they felt like they had a good meal, you know, and be happy and have a whole story. And so I wanted to keep it as tight as possible so people could kind of get through the book in one setting.
I think you achieved that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, how about the cover? Because the cover is very nice, too. It's attractive.
Yeah. The cover idea was a combination of, I was kind of talking to my husband about what the cover should be and how it should feel. And I think research is so important. Like going to Barnes and Nobles and pulling out the books that where your book would sit and looking at those covers and seeing what is similar about those covers. And then figuring out what you can do to make your book the same and different. So your book needs to seem like it fits in that genre, but you want it to stand out on the cover. So kind of having that idea about how, you know, old worldly historical books that are written about presidents and people who are important, how that looks. And then I knew I wanted singing to be involved, but I wanted it to be direct and not direct at the same time. And because I knew that, you know, the world did know her at a certain point in time, but not at the time that I was publishing the book. And so I didn't put her cover on the front because I understood, even though there's a sector of people who know her, the world at large don't know her today. So I wanted people to be interested in the book and not say to themselves, well, I don't know this person, so this might not be something that I want to read. So that was my intent on not putting her picture on the front cover. And then my husband kind of tossed around this idea of it being black and, you know, being a microphone. And I found a picture that was almost a silhouette of a woman. And I said, oh, we can do that. Instead of it being a woman, we can put a microphone there. And then the graphic designer just got it. She understood it. And came up with something that I think is very special.
Very nice. Now, we met at the James River Writers Conference last year.
Yes.
Was that your first, by the way?
It was my first time at the conference.
Did you like it?
I did enjoy it. I think it's a great resource for writers to get to meet other writers and get their questions answered that they've probably been holding, you know, in their beds where they're typing away. And so I think that it was a lot of topics broached that were very interesting and hopefully gets a lot of people unstuck if they are stuck at some point in the writing journey. So it was a really great experience, and I really enjoyed being on the panels.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, was you were a panelist at one panel or more than one time?
I was a panelist on two panels.
Two panels. And is are you comfortable with public speaking?
I think I love it. It's weird. Some of my friends say you're better at speaking to groups than you are to people one-on-one. But I think it just comes from my family and being on stage and being comfortable with having droves of people around you all the time. It's something about that that feels very familiar and warm to me in a weird way. And so I really enjoyed it. I love seeing people get unstuck. I think that's one of my favorite things. For people to walk away with some type of tip that's like, oh, that's the answer that I needed to get me to the next level. So I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful. How else do you promote yourself and your book? How do you get yourself in front of, on panels in front of people or book signings and things like that? What do you do?
So I really concentrated a lot when my book first came out on getting on the news, because I knew a lot of the people from my grandmother's era still watch the news. So I really kind of reached out to newscasters and tried to figure out what stories they were working on at the time, what stories they were interested in, and then how my book could tie into that. And so it made it easier for people to say yes to me because I was already in the same vein as what they were looking for or what their tastes were. So I ended up getting on all of the local news stations in my area, kind of making sure that I was in the same vein, and then using, once you get on one, using that as credit to get on another one. I also did promotions with magazines that, again, I knew my audience read, and so that was important. Podcasts like we're doing today, and then also tapping into influencers, so book bloggers that have whole, you know, Instagram pages dedicated to blogging about books they love, finding those who read nonfiction and read kind of books that were in line with what my book was about, and sending them a copy for free, and oftentimes they were grateful, and then they would post about it, and then that's how another audience would find out about it. And then bloggers that weren't necessarily book bloggers, but that were talking about topics that were in my book, and so then they would post about it, and their audience would find about it. So really figuring out how to partner with people that were already in line with what my book was about, what the themes and what the messages were, and, you know, offering them a copy of the book, and being grateful that they even talked to their audience about it, and that kind of got a lot of traction.
Oh, great. How do you reach out to, for example, those local TV stations or the magazines? Do you just send an email, or do you know somebody? How do you get your foot in the door to get those slots?
Typically, it always starts with email. Sometimes it's easier to call initially and find out, hey, who's the correct anchor for this particular thing? And then they'll tell you, and you ask, do they have an email? Or you go to their website and look at the email. And then you send an email, and typically that's been a good inroad for me. I think the key is not just emailing everyone that you know all at one time to, hey, you know, can you put my book on, but figuring out where your interests overlap. What can you bring to them that they need? And if you're helping them, then more than likely people are more open to help you help them.
Okay. And I imagine you do book signings.
Yes.
And how do you reach that? Do you have a number of contacts in independent bookstores and so forth?
Well, the book signings, I did start with independent bookstores, and then I worked with a couple of churches because her industry was gospel music. Book signings, you have to find a way to stand beside another event that's happening, because just going to your, you know, your average Barnes and Nobles, again, doesn't always give first-time authors the traffic maybe that they are looking for. So find a way to associate yourself with an event that ties into your book. So if your book is about dogs, then there could be a dog show or something that BarkBox is putting on, and you find a way to align with that. So it's not necessarily your traditional just bookstore that you're going to, but there are people that are interested in the topic in your book, and you can get traction that way.
Oh, very good idea. That's great. Are there places where people can listen to recordings of your grandmother?
Yes, actually, YouTube has some recordings of her. Also, the Virginia Folk Festival, they have recordings of her. She was so cool. The later years of her life, even though she dealt with dementia, she still like remembered every lyric to every song that she ever sang, which was very interesting to watch. To watch her literally really have dementia, and I think it's, you know, why it may have took our family a little bit longer to catch on to it, because she literally could do a whole show. There are lots of recordings of her, and people love her music, and people still play her music, and I think that's a really amazing thing.
It certainly is. Well, that's great. I'll just finish with this. What are you working on now, and how can people find you online?
So I'm working on turning the book into a movie. I'm kind of working on the screenplay right now. And that's an interesting writing experience. It's a different way of writing, where it's not so much narrative, but it's more, you know, you're writing what people say and what you hear, and it has to be very tight. So I'm teaching myself to write in that way, I guess you could say. And so that's something that I hope will show itself and become a movie. And I'd love to be in production in 2018. So that's a hard goal that I'm trying to get to. And then where people can find me is on social media, definitely on Instagram at TheJoyHarris. Also on Snapchat at TheJoyHarris. And on Facebook there as well. But I love people to shoot me messages. So if you're ever on Instagram, look me up and send me a comment, and I always respond.
Oh, very nice. Well, I hope to have you back for a screenplay podcast.
Yes, that'd be great. I look forward to it.
Well, good luck, and thank you.
Thank you. You enjoy your day.